Hi, Brendan.
Good evening, Alan.
The Not a Thing podcast 157. Wow, so many podcasts, so few guests in the last like few, and we're making up for it in spades this week because we have two guests. Why just stick with one, right? We have two guests.
Double trouble.
we have both folks who've been on the podcast before. We have Gina.
Hey there, everyone.
And
Thank
Julie.
Thank you for having me.
Hello.
Returning champions.
And so what's your thing? What's new, and why are we having you on this time?
Well, we are going to be having a booth where we're going to be selling stuff at a convention coming up. The convention is the Alternative Press Expo, otherwise known as APE.
Well, thank you for not making ape noises. I don't know if I could handle
it. Took all the restraint I have.
With four people here, that's pretty impressive that none of us attempted to do that.
I too am stunned. To be completely honest, I wasn't sure if people referred to it as APE. I've been like cautiously calling it APE, just, you know, to hedge my bets. But I'm glad to hear that that's actually the term for it.
Yeah, they say APE, and almost every piece of promotional material that I've seen about it has an ape on it. So They have fully embraced it.
It's not sponsored by Carhartt.
No, though the background of APE is interesting because this is a convention that was started originally in San Jose. It was started by SLG Press, or SLG Publishing, that is Slave Labor Graphics. And they're a comic book publisher that's been around since, I think, 1986. And they do a bunch of independent comics. They're probably best known for one comic series called Milk and Cheese that are about the misadventures of two kind of, I don't know, rough characters that are a carton of milk and a hunk of cheese. And they also seem to do...
How long does this comic go on for?
I was just going to blow right past that, but anyway.
So it's really milk and older milk.
Oh, good point. Yeah, they may be family.
So how did this convention grow into what it is now?
That's a really good question. I think a good boost of publicity for it happened sometime in the 90s when they did a partnership with Comic-Con International. So Comic-Con is not just a massive, massive convention in San Diego every year.
That has almost nothing to do with comics now.
Oh. It's actually a nonprofit organization.
Really? I did not know that. So it supports sort of other creative efforts, I guess?
Yeah. So they branched out beyond comics and started bringing in a lot more pop culture types of things over the last decade or two. But at their heart, they're a nonprofit, which is partly why the tickets are so cheap in general for their conventions. But also, it's led to their involvement with other kind of shows like this. So interestingly enough, the show has been in San Francisco for a little while with the backing of Comic-Con, but this last year, Comic-Con decided to say, we release you, go be free, go back to your indie roots. And so this year, it marks the return of it to San Jose after many, many years.
That's really exciting, actually.
Yeah, I think it's a great move because I think San Jose is a place that attracts conventions of really specific fan groups that are just in love with their stuff. Like the
furry
fans.
Convention?
No, it's true. It's true. The furry convention. Yeah. So
I've been in town during that one year, actually. It's really impressive. The some of the fursuits you see are just extraordinarily intricate.
Well made.
And it's grown. I remember I used to work downtown and it was two or three days. I think it's 4 days now. But I'm amused by their name because the furry convention's official name in short is FurCon, but that's short for Further Confusion. And I think that's actually a really good description because try describing furry to someone that doesn't know what it is.
No, that's absolutely fair. I actually, the only reason I really know about that culture is when I was in college in art school, one of the students that was in my class did a 2-year long sort of immersive art piece where she created a character within that community and did ongoing performances. And she'd sort of come back and report back about some stories and experiences. And over the course of the 2 years, she actually developed a ton of empathy for that community. And I think she still does performances with them. But it's a very interesting concept, I have to say.
It's great people watching during that time of year, for sure.
They're not people, Alan.
Well, sometimes there are people with them.
That's true.
I remember going out for lunch one day, just a lunch break from work on a Friday, and standing in line at a pita restaurant, and then having a furry and their handler behind me. And the handler was
P-I-T-A. P-I-T-A, not P-E-T-A.
Yes, pita.
Oh my gosh.
Pita and peta? Pita?
No, no,
I guess
pita.
They do say pita, don't
people
they?
For the ethical treatment of animals.
Yeah, that's the right pronunciation. Yes. I never realized how apt that was.
I did.
Immediately, too. I'm impressed.
That's why we have a show.
Fair enough.
So this year is the first year it's back in San Jose, and it's the first year it's not backed by Comic-Con anymore, or International Comic-Con International.
That's right.
So the thing. But did we go last year?
2 years ago.
2 years ago. That was fun. It was good. It's a good show. It's very much artists and comic artists and just tons of booths. I actually don't know. Do you know, are there panels at all, or is it just booths?
I heard there's supposed to be panels, but I haven't seen any notes about the programming for those yet. Hmm. So I don't know. We'll find out.
Yeah.
I really like the show, though, for the range of what they have, because as the alternative press expo, it means that there's a lot of original characters, but also a lot of fan art. And so you'll find fan art of almost anything you could imagine, not just comics, but video games and TV shows. I remember one of the booths that we bought some art from 2 years ago had a piece of fan art from Pee-wee's Big Adventure. Amazing
wow.
Larry. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
So,
which is a throwaway joke in the show, in the movie, right? So this is the movie Pee-wee's Big Adventure. Let me set the scene for what's going on. So Pee-wee's bike has just been stolen, and he's having a like town meeting of all the people in the town about how important it is to find his bike. And at one point, he says something really kind of inflammatory, and then everyone kind of does that talking amongst themselves kind of noise. And he turns to one of the people and it says, "Do you have something you'd like to share with us, Amazing Larry?" And the camera cuts to this guy with this like crazy multicolored mohawk and funky jacket with like weird lapels and all of these pins on it. And he's just dumbstruck for like a few seconds. And then the camera cuts away and then it's back to whatever they were doing. So someone like drew, like hand drew and painted Amazing Larry. I believe that was Jen Oakes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think what's even just as remarkable is the fact that people recognize this, that going, you know, down the halls, people look like, you know what? I think that's Amazing Larry. And then you're talking about it now, which is really amazing, actually, that not only did somebody create this piece, but you saw it, recognized it, and remembered it.
Yes, it is a very deep and weird subculture.
I mean, that's now kind of a common thing on the internet, to find these communities that you think no one else could possibly be a part of. But to to experience it in person, like at a Comic-Con type event or like here at Ape, it's pretty amazing to see.
Yeah, like so not only for these characters, but also the genres I didn't even know were genres that of things I like. we were walking around and there was some person that was hawking their graphic novel that they had made, and I forget all of the descriptions.
Oh, I remember it. Oh. I know which reference you're talking about. So this is we're walking through the convention hall and they're kind of just yelling out to the crowd to get people to come over, and it was young adult themes and dystopian futures, and I think that was it. Julie was just like, "Oh, I'm on board. Let's do this." So it's right in that like Hunger Games, Maze mm-hmm. Runner sweet spot, I think.
I feel like that genre really hit like a renaissance a couple of years ago with not only the Maze Runner like Hunger Games series, but also like Scott Westerfield's Uglies series, I think is a really interesting representation of that. I don't know. There's so many.
I just love that it's a good time. Genre.
Mm-hmm.
Good time to be a young adult.
Oh, you mean
or not a young adult?
Dystopian yeah. futures as a genre.
Yes,
as fiction. I prefer dystopian futures as fiction.
Good point. Very good point.
So, tell us more of the what you will, or tell us of it rather, what you'll be doing there. What's at your booth?
So Gina and I will be sharing a booth, and we needed a name for the booth, so we're calling it Sketchy Characters, because we were trying to think of a good overarching name that covered the range of what we do, because we both do very character-driven stuff, but it's in different realms. Mm-hmm.
No, it's true. We have very different styles, but they're all very either figure-based or narrative-based, or trying to sort of create a context around very specific figures. So that being the underlying unifying sort of attribute of our art, we figured that would be appropriate. And we also asked around for good names, and that was probably our favorite.
Keen, like what are you bringing, Gina?
Absolutely. So I'm bringing sort of a mishmash of things. We'll see how it all comes together. I recently opened a print shop online in an attempt to actually sort of gauge what people would be interested in. And that's half original works, some sort of painted landscape prints, some original characters, and half fan art. A lot based around video games like Dragon Age and Persona 4. But also some slightly more, like, atypical fandoms as well. I'm just trying to bring basically anything from my repertoire. And I also will be bringing, hopefully, some prints of a comic I've been working on. I recently finished the first chapter of it. It's a 30-page Dragon Age fan comic. So I'll also be selling drafts of that there.
Neat.
Oh, and finally, I will be bringing a few t-shirts as well, because on my site, I started offering t-shirts for not only the musicals we've worked on, but also some one-off original things, like a Schrodinger's cat shirt, so I'll be bringing those.
And what is your website?
Oh, it's currently a Shopify account, but it's...
Is it linked off your Tumblr?
Yes, it is. It's on my primary Tumblr page. So if you go to floatslikebricks.tumblr.com, you can get to the website pretty easily. The website is also named Floats Like Bricks, but I think it's .shopify.com off the top of my head.
I've always really liked that name. I'm curious where you got it from.
Ooh, okay. It's actually a horrible misquote from one of the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy books, but I like the misquote more than the original quote, to be completely honest, and it's stuck. I'm now kind of stuck with it. I've thought about changing it a couple times, but I'm rather fond. The original quote is the airships floated in the air in the same way that bricks don't. and like I said, it's stuck with me now.
There's worse things you could be stuck with.
It's true. I agree with that.
Notathingpodcast.com.
Damn you, notathing.com.
Oh, we haven't looked to see if that placeholder website is still there for that. I don't know if we would want it. Maybe. We probably do. I mean, once our media
empire... We have such name recognition already.
Once the media empire expands, you know, once we move out of podcasting and into... what are we going to move into? Car production. Well, just like Chrysler. They're not doing anything.
Well, I know, that's the logical evolution. I agree.
Yeah, pretty sure.
I just checked. They do still have that bullshit placeholder.
Okay. Notathing.com is not a thing.
.com.
Yes, that is true. Yeah.
So, Gina, you mentioned you're going to have stuff from your musicals, plural. I knew you were working on one of them.
Actually, that is a good question. So, yes, for a while I've been working on my brother and my first original show, Like Dying Things Do, which had its first production in May, I think it was. And that's actually up online. And that was a fantastic thing to work on. It's awesome. a sort of slice of life approach to the zombie apocalypse genre. Although slice of life makes it seem a little bit light, there are some heavy themes that it deals with. But it's a 4-person show, and it was a ton of fun to work on. We're currently shopping it around, trying to get another full production. But we also recently re-released all of our music from our first show, which was the Midnight Channel musical, which ended poorly, but we did re-release all the music, and that's up online again. I'm working on a new show right now, which is a mystery this time. So that one's under wraps only because it's still a little ephemeral, but I'm looking forward to working on it because the mystery genre is so much fun, and it's going to be slightly more lighthearted than our last show, which is not hard.
Very cool.
Thank you.
When you said it was a mystery, I started thinking, are you saying the show is a mystery, or is it the mystery
show? That's exactly what
yes,
I thought.
The show is a mystery, but it is also it is sort of a reimagining of the noir genre, just because there really haven't been all that many noir musicals, which is an odd situation in my mind, since noir is so tied to music in sort of almost a theatrical background and perspective. So we're approaching noir, but with some fresh eyes, and also with some trope inversion, which is always fun. So we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, it really lends itself. The monologues just immediately turn into you know, like they turn into monologue songs, so you have solos. Makes sense.
I know, it's one of those rare cases where you can actually play noir straight. Now, I feel like noir has been boiled down to such, like, clear cliches, which is, like, you know, the narrator, the put-upon detective, the femme fatale, the arguably thin mystery plot, because a lot of the mysteries during the time were, I mean, it was the first foray into film mystery, and so they're good, but they're less complicated than I think we're used to now, which is nice in its own right. So there's a lot of cliches, but it's good to try to reapproach the genre sincerely, as opposed to just trying to make fun of it.
Cool.
Mm-hmm.
It's been hard boiled down.
So, Julie, what are you bringing to the show?
Well, I'm bringing a few things for certain, and then we'll see what I get done in the next 2 weeks. The things that I'm bringing for certain are I made a series of portraits of musicians on kind of these wooden plaques with elaborate scroll work. So I've got a few of those originals left, but I'm making a calendar out of all of those. So I'm now learning about the software for getting that together, and those should be ready in time for the show. And I'm also bringing a set of some custom vinyl toys that I made in the theme of arts and crafts. So each one represents a different style of craft. So those are certain. What's not so certain is that I want to bring some sketches as well in frames, but I haven't quite decided what I want to focus on. And so I have some sketches that are in a steampunk kind of style, so I may go for those. But I've been pulled in a couple of other directions recently, too. I'm really tempted to do some fan art, either for Mass Effect, because I'm feeling inspired by some of Gina's commissions, and also having played the trilogy. Thank you, Brendan. or there's an awesome comic series called Saga. And I haven't seen that much fan art out there for it, and I'm surprised because it's such a great series. So I'm tempted to make some stuff for that.
I've never heard of Saga.
Oh, it's great. It's written by Brian K. Vaughan, who wrote Why the Last Man.
Mm-hmm.
And he is just such a cinematic storyteller. Saga is a sci-fi universe, and it's about these warring races and characters caught up within it. And the part of it is his writing, which is always fantastic, but the other part is the art. The art is by an artist named Fiona Staples, and she is possibly the best illustrator of expressions that I've ever seen. I think her work is so tight and consistent, but so on point for capturing different types of facial expressions that I just love her work.
Neat.
I'll have to check that out. That sounds really interesting, actually.
So would you be doing that art live, or are you going to... And I know when we've gone to comic conventions, they often have like some folks like drawing or sketching there. Would you do it live, or is this something you'd have to do ahead of time?
I would do it ahead of time, because I think to make it really look right, I need photo references. And I'm not quite at the level where I can just knock out something fantastic out of my brain that is figure-based. It would be kind of cartoony and exaggerated, and that's not really the style that I want to do right now.
I'm just remembering when we were at... Where were we? We were at a bar, and you drew Jafar, just kind of from memory, very randomly, and it blew someone's mind. It was crazy. I don't even remember how that happened. But like, oh yeah, Jafar. He looks like this, and Jafar from Aladdin, and you drew him on like a napkin, and I swear the girl that was with us, like her head exploded.
the number of times that I've been at meals with you and like we finished and left and then see just some little art piece that you were working on, it shocked me multiple times.
So I'm not saying you shouldn't draw while you're
bring a pad of post-its and then you could just like doodle stuff or whatever and then give those out for samples.
Oh, maybe I could get some artist trading cards and do doodles on those. Have you ever seen those?
That would be fantastic. No, I've never heard of that.
So it's essentially just pieces of paper that are cut to the size of collectible trading cards. Mm-hmm. And you can get them in Bristol paper, so the really nice, smooth illustration board, or even watercolor, or I've seen canvas cut that size. But the idea is just to make something of that size. And that would be pretty close to the size of a post-it note, but something a little sturdier. Possibly.
The wheels are turning. Are you going to do any, what should we commission? Brendan, what should we commission?
Oh, I already have a piece that I want Julie to make. She already knows about it.
Oh?
Is it a secret?
No. It was a picture I found online, so I guess I'd be stealing someone else's intellectual property, but that's beside the point. Someone photoshopped Commander Shepard from Mass Effect with Neil deGrasse Tyson's head on it, and it's the single greatest thing I've ever seen. I want that hanging in my home.
Okay.
You mentioned you wanted to get some of the other characters in there, too.
Yeah, I was thinking something along the lines of the main characters from Mass Effect 2 with different scientists' heads superimposed. So, like, Bill Nye could be Morden. And,
I was about to say, are they still alien? Or are you just taking Bill Nye's head and putting it on, like, Morden's body?
Just put it... That's actually a better idea.
No, I think we could do this. We could take... It could still look like Bill Nye, but I'd want to exaggerate a little bit to make the eyes a little bigger and make those kind of horn things. Like,
make him more Solarian.
I like how you guys are on the same wavelength for this. This is good. Because I think I played maybe the first, I don't know, hour of the first game's campaign. And then I just, like, would sit and watch Julie play, and that is my experience with Mass Effect. I did not pick anything or anything. Yeah,
I loaned you my Xbox for months, and you're like, oh yeah, I played for a little bit. It's not for me.
I feel like Mass Effect's one of those that actually you can just sit back and watch, though, as so long as somebody else is willing to play it, because it's fairly character driven and pretty, so you know,
I first playthrough, because you don't want them skipping the dialogue options because they've already done it.
What the only thing I noticed was how every game seemed to have like the really annoying thing about it. Like, so the first game, the really annoying thing that I noticed is all the load times are in elevators, so there's a lot of riding in elevators, just kind of. We're riding in an elevator facing forward, and that's the whole shot because it's waiting for the thing to load.
Oh, I have another annoying one about
and
that.
And then in the second game...
No headshots? No headshots. In the first game, there was a target around the chest, and I didn't realize what was going on until I thought, why am I not killing anybody?
I actually had that same experience where I'm like, I must be truly terrible at this game because nothing is dying the way it should. And then I realized that I was just not aiming where I was supposed to be aiming. It's not a very intuitive, at least the first game is not really built like a shooter. I mean, it's presented as a shooting game, but boy, are the mechanics not streamlined the way most shooters are. Although I will say when you switch over to Mass Effect 2, it's a really jarring switch, because suddenly they're like, no, we're going to use at least sort of best practices. Let's try this out. I'm like, this isn't what I've been playing.
This is too easy.
And I picked up Mass Effect 2 the same night as I beat Mass Effect 1, and so it was a very shocking transition.
And then I think in Game 2, in Mass Effect 2, there was this like weird planet searching nonsense.
Oh yeah, where you have to like find minerals and such.
I loved that.
I liked it once I
so many hours
I had to do it, but that happened at the very end of the game, so I did it all at once.
I would come home from work at 2 a.m. and would just sit and launch probes and I'd go to sleep.
A little sad, I'm not gonna lie.
It was very soothing,
I guess, but like, all told, you only need, like, it took me about maybe 20 minutes of work to do all of the probing that the game actually required. So I guess past that, you're just like, well, might as well at this point.
Well, I wanted all the minerals.
Okay.
I got all the minerals. I stripped all those planets clean.
Meanwhile, the collectors are taking over the galaxy.
Yeah,
well, they're
but
stripping
I have so
out
many
the
resources.
People, and Brendan was stripping out all the minerals.
And then
there's
I think
a little collector in all of us.
What the thing that killed me for the third game was, I think at the very end of the game, because you beat the game, and then at one point, because you were playing on, I think you were playing on normal, and then you switched it to easy to replay the ending, just to get a different ending, and I could not believe the jump between easy and normal. Because when you flipped it to easy, you weren't even, like, shooting people. You were just running into them and, like, hitting them with the butt of your gun, and they were dying.
It was great. Yeah, I played the whole last few missions punching people.
That's sort of satisfying, though. You're like, you know what? I've made it to the end. I'm done. I'm Commander Shepard.
Exactly.
I actually never beat Mass Effect 3, to be completely honest. I got about halfway through and got kind of frustrated with it. I need to go back and actually finish that game.
All right, yeah. I have a recommendation for you.
Okay.
If you're going to do that, I'd say download the extended ending first, because I played through Mass Effect 3. I got the original ending because I wanted to see... why people were so mad. And then I went and did the extended ending. And I'd say, you don't need to go through that. Just go straight for the extended ending.
There's a reason people were mad, and the extended ending is slightly better. So, all right, that makes sense.
Yes.
I don't know. Like, the characterizations were kind of weird. Anyway, I mean, I had some gripes, which is why I put it down, but I do need to actually finish it.
Oh, yeah. I have a lot of gripes with the, yeah... Well, I mean, that's the only thing for me for watching, when you're watching the cinema scenes and you're not, you have no, I have no investment, right, in whatever's happening. It's like, wow, these are, these people are not acting well. It's just the voice acting for everyone but, like, Commander Shepard and Garrus and maybe, what's the Krogan, one of the Krogan.
Grunt or Rex?
Or Rex.
Maybe it's one of, yeah, everyone else, I'm like, I don't like their voice acting at all.
Well, that's only because I played as Femme Shep, like Commander Shepard, so my love interests ended up being a little different. So I think we got a little more exposure to characters that were not so interesting.
I think really the best, maybe the funniest thing Julie has said all year was, I was, and you know which one, where I'm going, right, Julie? So I was, cause Julie's been, you've been doing kind of work contracts such that you have a fair amount of downtime and you can just, you know, spend it doing whatever you wanted. And there were times when you were spending it just playing Mass Effect, like whole like halves of days playing. I guess whole halves of days, that's silly. But
yeah,
anyway.
What does that mean?
Right. So I would call home or text, you know, hey, what do you want for dinner? I want to, let's go get, some wings. What wings do you want? You want, you know, cause they have, we got our wings from Wingstop and they have specific flavors. It's like, what do you want? Oh, I always get lemon pepper. It's like, oh, good. Lem pep for Fem Shep. It was so.
And that's the end of a conversation. You're just like, yep. All right.
Yep. Acknowledged.
Which he was so delighted about. Like, this is the level of pun. Just love it.
Not even a pun, it just rhymes. It's great. Anyway. So what are you playing now that you've beaten Mass Effect?
Well, I've got a tiny bit left to play on Mass Effect. So I need to finish that out.
Oh, you're doing all the DLC?
Yeah. And semi-completist, I'm not trying to do absolutely everything, but I do want to finish out the playable missions that I could get with the DLC. So I'm finishing out the last one right now, which takes place on the Citadel, and it's kind of goofy, but...
That's what I've heard. I've heard it's like, it's really amusing, but also like strangely tonally different than the rest of the game.
It is. Like some of the characters complain if you don't take them on missions. It's just, it's a little odd.
I always felt weird playing DLC for the third game because of the way the game ends. It's like, where are you going to go back to do stuff? That's not an option.
Well, that's actually, I mean, speaking of DLC, I just recently beat the Dragon Age Inquisition DLC. And that was a really interesting thing because it's the first time they've ever done an epilogue to a game. So that was a fascinating choice because it effectively locks down the game. It's like, look, if you do this, you can't go back. You can have another save file, but in order to do an epilogue, we're taking you into the future. We're going to do some radical changes. So hold on tight and, you know, if there's anything else you want to do, go do it first. Which was a really interesting approach. And I thought it was, for the most part, really effective, actually.
I think an epilogue makes more sense for DLC than, like, oh, well, let's go insert this at some other point in a game that has an actual narrative structure.
Right. Because you're playing, like, the middle. You go back and play. You're, like, playing, like, the middle of the game after you've beaten the game.
Yeah.
Right? I kind of disagree, actually.
I don't know. Having played an epilogue, I don't quite agree, because I feel like if you're going to do an epilogue that has story, you shouldn't be charging people a premium for it, especially if it is a conclusion to the game. If you insert something in the middle of the game, that's just added content. That's extra levels, that's more amusing interactions with your teammates or whatever, given that type of game. But if you do an epilogue, that seems to me to be something that either should be included in the game at launch or should be released as part of the game, as like a patch or something along those lines.
That makes sense.
Yeah, what am I thinking of? I'm thinking of the DLC for The Last of Us.
Oh, that's a good one.
It's a good kind of flashbacky kind of thing. So it works as a, it works in a, in a, because it doesn't mess with the narrative structure of the game.
Mm-hmm. That's like color. A whole separate story.
Yeah, yeah. Although
that's like the Outlast DLC Whistleblower, in my opinion, is significantly better than the original story.
Huh?
But it doesn't. I think it's better. But it doesn't interact or influence the original story, so it's just its own separate thing.
Outlast is the jump scary.
Yeah, it's a horror hospital. Game.
Yeah. You have one of the mechanics is you have a camcorder and you can use it to put it in like night vision mode so you can see in the room because otherwise it's too dark, which means you always see the crazy scary thing right as the batteries run out and you're like running. I saw a little bit of it. Yeah, I don't think you'd like it.
It's a good horror game. it's very good for a horror game because it like. The camcorder thing is both a good mechanic and it also is excuse for you to be there because it's, you know, it's sort of a haunted house. It's not a ghost story, but it's one of those jump scary haunted house type horror stories. And the camcorder is there because you're trying to document it. So at the very least, you're there for some reason other than, you know,
your car broke.
Pointless exposition. Yeah, exactly. Like, why didn't you just leave? Well, you did. At least you knew coming in.
I like it when they...
Did any of you play PT?
PT?
I did play PT.
What's no, I don't, what I don't have a, we don't have PS4, so we did not.
Mm-hmm. What's PT?
It was a game. It wasn't even a game. It was a demo that was supposed to be for a Silent Hill sequel.
Mm-hmm.
That they released and then took away because they decided they weren't going to do that for some reason.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like the story of PT, like the story behind PT is more interesting than PT's story in and of itself. it's a single room horror game. You walk through a hallway over and over and over and over again. As you know, small things change and it's a beautiful little game. And it's very, it's based in the environment. It's scary not because things are jumping at you or because like scary things are happening, but because you work yourself up into sort of a frenzy over it.
Yep.
But anyway, they released it at the very end. There was this big like, this is going to be the platform on which we're going to build our next Silent Hill game. But then there was a lot of sort of political drama and they pulled the demo not only from... the PSN network, but also, or I guess the PS network, I don't know.
ATM machine, we get it.
Yeah, I was like, I guess, anyway, not only from PSN, but also from the consoles that had downloaded it. So it was a really dramatic move, and made PT a much more important game than I think it was intended to be.
It scared the crap out of me.
Well, no, I mean, it's definitely scary, yeah. And I think there's still, like, a bunch of Let's Plays of it out, if anybody's interested in playing it, because, unfortunately, it's hard to get your hands on now.
Yeah, I never thought walking around would be so scary, but it is very effective.
I think my next game, I'm just going to hold out and get Rock Band 4 in 2 weeks, so I'm like the opposite end of the spectrum on this one.
You'll have to tell me how that is, because I'm curious to see how they approach it now that it's been a few years.
Yeah, the way I understand it is that they're ditching the keyboard. So it's just guitar, bass, and drums and vocals. But and then they're adding at least two new kind of mechanics that are in regards to, like, when you get, like, the solo segments of ways that you can, like, mess around or improvise on the drums or on the guitar in a way that is supposedly more performance oriented and less let me try and hit the exact kind of beats.
Mm-hmm.
They're saying it's, you know, going back to basics. You know, I understand it's a great platform. They needed to keep need to keep that coming in. So I'm happy for that. I definitely missed it ever since Julie broke our drum set.
So that's what I'm looking forward to. In Rock Band 4, they will have a new drum set that has even better dampening on the drum pads. And I need a new one anyway, because yes, I did break ours.
You played right through that snare drum. It was great, because it was like, I think we're playing through whatever song it was, and partway through, like, Julie's score just starts plummeting, and I'm doing the, you know, the star power thing to save the thing, and she says, "I think I broke this." And I look over, and the drum pad is like hanging from the wire. You know, it was great. Well done. So Gina, what are you playing now?
Well, I actually just yesterday beat the game Danganronpa Another Episode, which is fascinating and requires a lot of backstory, so I'm probably not going to talk about that, but
we met the translators for that game at the last PAX.
I remember that they hosted a panel. Yeah.
It's just one of those, like, game names. And that was one of the things that's like, why did you choose to not translate this? It was a neat panel, because they were talking about what they sort of, like, there is a weird kind of set of things. Like, we, you know, you need to translate some things for understanding, but then you sometimes leave things untranslated for kind of not dramatic effect exactly, but kind of to leave some kind of, like, mystery and, you know, kind of a flair for the exotic connected to it. So
I actually think that this is a really interesting sort of game to act as an example of both good and bad localization, because they clearly put a ton of work into localizing this game. And there's sections where you can sort of feel their struggle. More than I've ever felt in a localized game before, where they're putting so much work into it that sometimes it almost backfires, because they're trying to keep themes appropriate to their original context while also adapting them for a Western audience. And it's just a really, really interesting dynamic that they had, or it's a line they had to walk. Mm-hmm. So good game, strange game, weird game, probably controversial game, but it's very good. and now I'm finally playing Borderlands 2 is actually my real answer.
Neat.
Mm-hmm.
Yay, games. It's good. I have a, I think I'm still, I don't know. Every once in a while I pick up like a new game and we'll play it for a little bit. And then I fall right back into that FTL faster than light rut. It's really bad. Once it came out on iPad, it's like, I don't even know why I have anything else loaded on
it. It's on iPad?
Yeah, it is. They have an iOS version. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to say that out loud.
Oh, no. I just kicked my habit.
I've apparently managed to avoid this one, and I'm thinking that may be a good thing, but I also now desperately want to see what you're talking about.
It's called Faster Than Light. It's sometimes just abbreviated FTL. It's a roguelike, so everything is completely random when you play. It's sort of space exploration and combat, and it has maybe the best soundtrack I've heard in a while. It's kind of chiptunes, very neat, because what they do is you're exploring space, so sometimes when you jump from one star system to the next, there's like a thing there that you have to confront, and sometimes there's not. But the way they do it is, in the regions of space, they have a theme music that is explore and a theme music that is battle. And what they do is, if you ever jump into a star system that has like enemies there, it switches into the battle kind of set of music, but otherwise the music just tracks, like, and it never stops. And when it switches, if you download the soundtrack, you'll see that there's clearly explore tracks and battle tracks. And what they must do is, when they must just play essentially both tracks, and then if you ever flip into a battle, it just mixes down into the battle track. So it's just a seamless transition into everyone's fighting, and then if you blow the other ship up, it mixes back into the explore mode musically.
That's clever.
I love it.
And I totally skip that, because I'll mute the game and play the Mass Effect soundtrack while I'm playing.
It all comes back to Mass Effect, guys.
I think the other nice thing about that music is, when I just hear chiptune, I tend to think of pretty frenetic music. So really
Anamanaguchi?
Yes. Really upbeat, just kind of frenetic. This is chiptune that's dreamy. It's really kind of beautifully ambient in parts, but it just...
Haunting.
It's, yeah, haunting. That's a nice description.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to check this out. And then I'm going to be very upset, probably, when
I pre-apologize for the lack of time that you are going to be running into shortly.
Just remember that fate is random and cruel. And if you can accept that, you'll be fine.
Cool. Well, we're bumping up close to the end of the show. We want to just... give everyone one more chance to remind everyone what's going on, where are you going to be, all that kind of good stuff.
First weekend of October, Alternative Press Expo in San Jose at the Convention Center. It's going to be that first weekend, I believe, is
3rd and 4th.
October 3rd and 4th. Yes, 10 to 5 every day. And Gina and I will have the booth Sketchy Characters, so come on by.
Yeah, we really look forward to seeing you, and this will be a lot of fun.
And where else can we see your art?
Absolutely. You can find my art at floatslikebricks.tumblr.com. And I also have a Patreon under the same name.
And you can find my art at the less creatively named juliameridian.com.
And you can find my art at notathingpodcast.com.
I don't do art. It's just kind of, you know, whatever. It's good.
Words are our medium, Alan. Don't be ashamed of that.
I write haikus and do this podcast. So, Brendan, great job. Way to pull together yet another fine show. We'll have all sorts of stuff to talk about next week. I will talk to you then.
Thanks for coming on, you two.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, thank you.
Till next time, Alan.